We'll see you back at service. I'm not bothered about times today.
Not bothered by times? Not bothered, just delighted.
Quickest by 7.
Are the notes okay?
Awesome. Just some truck faster.
I'm f***ing spitting out. I didn't look up.
Fair play, Paul. That was awesome.
Yeah?
Awesome. Well done.
$2,000 in my pocket to go to the Donegal Rally for the weekend. That's how good I am.
$2,000.
Did you buy a chicken roll and throw the change in?
For two days' work.
Yeah. I started recording the episode. We're just going to drive on. Hello and welcome to Series 2, Episode 2 of the Spin Podcast. And for one episode only, the boom is back. Hello and welcome to the boom.
We're back.
Yeah, so... this is the Celtic Tiger episode where anything goes, as it used to back in the day. So thanks for tuning in for episode 1 of the second series, if you have done so. Where Tommy and I talked shite about the European Championship for about an hour. And as usual, I'm going to remind you to go back and listen to series 1 of both the 2001 WRC, if you haven't done so already. So we've got a full crew this evening. We've got Tommy, William and Art McCarrick back again. Hello, lads.
Hello.
Buongiorno.
How are we all getting on?
Right. So, Celtic Tiger, what was the fucking crack? Where do you think things started getting really spicy?
Irish lads outbidding Saudis for land.
In terms of rallying, like when do you think could you try and pinpoint the even a year?
Yeah,
just got a fucking hand.
2002, because we never had much in 2001 with foot and mouth. And I don't know, there was just a bit of pent up. Everyone seemed to have new cars in 2002.
Everyone seemed to save the pennies in 2001. There was still money there. It was all sitting away in post office accounts.
The SSIA has landed.
That's it, yeah.
The mattresses were touching the ceiling. In 2001.
Yeah, Irish houses were like Escobar's houses with the mattress full of money. No one knew what to do with it. So everyone went over to ProDrive and just went nuts.
SSIA stood for Subaru Impreza account.
And no one was paying any VAT on anything.
Still aren't.
No, there was a lot of cash floating about.
Cash job.
A lot of fellas buying cars for cash as well, which we'll probably get to in a while. But tell me what was in there.
But 2000 was, you know, like, I suppose you're right though. The jump from 2000 to 2002, it's probably not too dissimilar to the state we find ourselves in now, because 2001 is probably not much different to the year we're in now. Not a lot of rallies, you know, maybe we've half a dozen if we're lucky this year. If you count what has already run, but I suppose 2002 we came back and we've kind of had a strange year or two as well. We'd lost two huge Irish rally heroes in Frank Maher and Bertie Fisher, so it was a new era as well that was kind of starting in 2002 for rallying as well in Ireland.
And actually, on that point, I know it was brought up on the, I think it was a part 2 or 3. On podcast with Kevin Glendinningen and Andrew Nesbitt, and he talked about how Bertie Fisher was handing him his sponsorship deals, where you had big sponsorship deals like that at the time that you just don't see anymore.
Well, I know from my time working in Murray's in Dublin, they were working very closely with Andrew Nesbitt at one stage, and one thing that was remarked upon was how professionally he came in with the portfolio and the presentation to, I think it was Sparkle got involved as well at the time, and everything was branded. The ground sheet was branded with Cuisine de France, with Subaru Ireland, obviously, had come on board, and Pirelli, Sparkle, you know, you name it. So it kind of, it raised the bar another notch from where it already was at a high level with the likes of Bertie Fischer previously. But yeah, 2002 was, it was a Subaru fest though, with the exception of Mikhail's Toyota.
Yeah, if 2001 had been a normal season, the jump mightn't have seemed that mad maybe in 2002. And the other thing you're saying there about like the likes of, you know, where Nesbitt was at, like the CEO of a good, almost recession-proof company, and, you know, had all these deals and was very professional. The problem was that the Celtic Tiger, a lot of people thought, sure, I can get to that level, no bother. That's what happened, like.
A lot of people thought a lot of things in the Celtic. Like, I think a lot of us, Tommy, you're probably the oldest of us. You know, I don't really remember a huge amount of the lunacy that went on. It's only kind of looking back in it now, talking about the side of rallying, like, you know, you'd read articles there about fucking swimming pools going into, you know, the back of terraced houses and fellas renting choppers there to go over to horse racing in the UK and just mad carry on. You know, you probably, it's the story about someone popping a champagne bottle and a chopper and missing the fucking engine cutoff switch there over the channel or something. You know, just mad stuff. Like, but I suppose, you know, I just thinking back in it, right, and looking at RPM season reviews, and I know that Andrew Nesbitt made that point on KG's podcast. He was talking to Plum reckoned from 1996 to 2006 was unprecedented compared to what had gone before. I think Killarney in 2000, no, the Tarmac Championship in 2000 was a farce. There was about five fucking rounds. Lots of rallies didn't run. It was very messy. But the entry for Killarney in 2000, it was the start of the new millennium, obviously. First time I groaned, that was crazy. Like, you had a lot of WRC cars for the time, for a country, on the fringes of Europe. You know, next stop, if you keep going west, next stop America. Like,
you know, even back then, if you look at the amount of WRC cars that were starting any European Championship round, do you care to mention even one of the coefficient 20 ones? Like, there was a lot. There was, like, who would be that year? In Tudor and Prezes, there was Nesbitt and McGarrity. There was McHale and the Corolla. There was two Focuses, which were pretty new over the box at the time. You had Bindi and Boland. There was a couple of Escort WRCs there. You had Maher and who bought Boland's Escort? Was it Hugh Dunn?
Hugh Martin Doherty.
And I'm sure there was a few more kind of bits of Escort. They were kind of half WRCs and half Cosworths, you know, the ones I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know what they were. You know, they looked the part, but then they sounded like an old fucking Sierra, like, you know, kind of a...
You look in the back of them, you check out the suspension, that's how you know whether it's actually...
Still at the H-pattern box.
H-pattern boxes.
Well, to be fair, Boland's first one, the yellow car, had the H-pattern box because the works cars only got the mid-97 anyway, sequentially.
Yeah,
sad men, aren't we?
We're very sad. Again, this is like the best of thing. Why do I need to know that? Like,
I just realized this is a Friday night. We should be doing something way cooler.
By the end of the boom, everyone had a sequential.
Yeah. You were nothing if you were changing if you had a H pattern there by 2002 or 3. Actually, right? I think 2000 kind of lead into what was to come subsequently, like. Because by 2003, things got out of hand. Like, I know, 2001, you know, obviously for foot and mouth, nothing really went on. 2002, things were ramping up. Boland had an N7 in 2001, or 2002, sorry. Nisbet had that spicy P2000. That was a cool car, actually, in fairness. And there was a few Corollas floating around and stuff. But 2003... Everybody went to ProDrive over Christmas, especially McGarrity. I think McGarrity, like, the amount of S8s that man went through in 2003 was outrageous. Like he pretty much had a different car every rally. I think there might be a couple of rallies where
did he ever do the same event in the same car?
I'm sure he had to. But I remember even the year after 2003, it would have been 04. 04 or
2004 does come after
2004 or 05. He was in one of the red. He was in one of the red cars. It was an S10 because Subaru used to bring in their new car for Portugal, and whatever car McGarrity had in the Lakes, it was the car Petter Solberg had in Monte Carlo the same year. I was like, Jesus Christ, it was nuts.
Was that the car he won the back-to-back circuit in with the red? With the red S, he had the S9 was the red one, and the yellow was the S8.
He had the S9s and S10s were red.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
S11 was silver when he had it for a while.
Yeah,
that was a cool car.
Actually, and I still have, funnily enough, I still have a poster up in the garage of the like a double cutout from Pace Notes with the red S9 and the yellow S8 from his back-to-back circuit win. That was 2003.
Yeah, that was 03, 04. 03, he won the circuit in the yellow car.
That's right, yeah.
I have it up here in front of me. Between S7s and S8s and S9s in 2003, McGarrity used, I think, 7 different WRC cars, and I'm actually excluding an old 99 car because that was fucking... Sure, if you had a 99 car in 2003 or whatnot...
That was for the Northern Ireland Forestry Championship. You needed a championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the equivalent of having a 1300 Swift now at that stage. You know,
it was a clubman car.
You would recce cars at higher spec than that. Like.
The Northern Ireland Championship was even more nuts. Like, for a smaller portion of a population, the amount of yokes that were in that was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, absolutely. Like it was crazy, and that was McGarrity, obviously, as well. McGarrity at the time was running a lot of cars. There was a lot of cars being run out far, and you know, he was
Autotech. Wasn't that kind of linked in with that? Was a guy Ken Skidmore. If you ever remember getting motoring news or motorsport news, the ads in the back where you'd see the World Cars or the Group N Recce cars for sale, it was always him. But inevitably, McGarrity would land on with something. Does that ring any bells?
Is Ken Skidmore CA1 Sport now, or am I gone?
No, that's Martin Wilkinson.
Yes,
that's
right. Sorry. Yeah.
Was that the time McGarrity also started selling helicopters or leasing them?
Around the same time, I think.
Because I even remember at that time, I actually think it was Cashel in Tipperary had the highest percentage of ownership of private helicopters per capita in the country. Something mental like that. I'm not messing. It's
horsey lads with notions.
When you had an entry list for helicopters and events, you knew you were doing something right.
It wasn't horsey lads with notions. It was bloody plumbers.
So on the hand with McGarrity, he actually had an S9 in 2003 for an event. No, it was at the end of it. But that's how quickly things accelerated in terms of the technology over here. That cars that were box car that year. It was literally Rally by Mackin in that year, and McGarrity had it towards the end of the year. I mean,
he was pretty much a pro drive dealer. Like, that was it.
And then around 2004, a couple of fellas who had Subarus and, like, I don't know, maybe weren't that quick, were like, just buy something else and try a fucking Hyundai Accent WRC or something.
Yeah, let's get a Focus.
Just started buying different yokes. Yeah, like,
let's get a Fabia. My abiding memory of that time, and you know, the amount of cars that were around, and you know, you'd expect the top probably 6 or 7 crews in a tarmac around to have the very latest kit. I remember looking at Bond having an S9 in 2005 in Killarney, and turning to my father and saying, dead serious, like, that is Boland okay for money? I thought because Boland didn't have an S10 that he was actually
That comment alone is the boom.
Yeah.
It, like, we could actually end the podcast right now.
Yeah.
And Morris, at the ripe age of 15, 16, turns around and genuinely out of concern is asking, because a lad has a 2 year out of date World Rally car. Jesus, lads, we really made a mess of it, didn't we?
I genuinely thought, I was like, lads, I turned to my dad, like, and he was looking at me as if I'd fucking two heads, like, and he was like, come here, do you have any idea how much it costs to run that thing? Like, I was like, tell me, like, and then he took me through it in, you know, rebuilds and kind of life parts and the fuel alone and tires and all that sort of stuff. And then I was kind of thinking, okay, because you know, when you're a kid, like you don't really think about this, you just think, sure,
and 100 like,
must need we're,
we're 12 or 13, you don't factor in that kind of stuff. Like now, I know an 06 10, an 06 to 10 Focus, the clutch and casing alone for that is 18 sterling. 18 grand sterling.
But sure,
I did the full Tarmac Championship in 2017 for that.
But even, I quoted one day for an S12B clutch, and even at trying to be semi-competitive with the price, you were upwards of 10 grand sterling.
Oh,
that's, and that's a car. That's now before everyone says, "Oh, bring back the 2-liter world cars and I'll ban the R5." That's a 12-year-old rally car.
Yeah,
even take that time.
At least 12-year-old.
Do you remember the piece that was done? Remember with Derek McGean when they're going through Donnelly's Corolla? And remember now you're talking a very old car, and you did a thing about the drive shaft, 13,000 sterling for the main shaft, main prop shaft.
Well, I had a customer who was in quite regularly in my time up there, and he was in the middle of restoring a 06 Focus for somebody. And he'd done a bit of work on, he used to do a lot of subcontracting for the works teams. And he said the biggest issue they had when they were going with servicing and running these cars, they had to take off the wheel studs because a lot of them were made of titanium. Now, the sheer volume of World Rally cars that were there would suggest that not everyone's got to be a professional team or have the most professional guys run, because there's only so many people out there with the finesse and care of doing it. Not to say anyone isn't capable, but you know, you get somebody who's fairly vicious with an impact gun ringing.
There's plenty of them in Ireland.
Yeah, down on top of this. But the best insight of all, it's actually not from the Irish Tarmac Championship, but I suppose the fact that the BRC did cross wires a number of years also by having common rules with the World Rally Car. If anyone gets the opportunity to buy or get a lend of the Johnny Milner DVD, I think it's On the Limit is what it's called. I got it on Amazon recently. It's like Morris says that, you know, Jesus, he okay for money that he's only in an S9. He was in an S8, and you want to see if somebody's on a budget, if not to say that drivers don't have the talent to back up the machinery they have. A lot of drivers have an insane amount of talent and they don't have the machinery. And some guys are quite talented and the machinery is maybe that couple percentage more than what their talent's at. If you don't have the budget to run these cars, they're a nightmare. Like, and even the tricks that they were showing of, you know, checking the drive shafts. Yeah, that drive shaft is on the front right. They looked at the label on it. It was once a left-hand drive shaft. So you can imagine the force that had gone through at some stage. Fantastic DVD to show the stresses some people would go to stay competitive at a top-tier championship. But clearly it wasn't much of a bother to a lot of lads.
It's a good point. Like I said, it wasn't just a case of... And like fair enough for us, we were that age where all we saw was World Rally Cars and that was it.
Well, I was in college, so I saw loads of cans.
But yeah, do you remember we spoke about like these are like they're complex pieces of engineering kit. They're systems, they're not just a car.
And that's because World Rally Cars were never designed for privateers.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Never meant to get near them.
And we had, lo and behold, we got them.
We had Motorsport News, was it 06, 07, did a whole feature on all the World Rally. Was it 73 or 74? On the island at a time.
And again, but the highest in the world, the highest percentage of ownership of World Rally Cars ever in the world was on this island.
Yeah, I think your helicopters one goes with that. Per head of capita, I think with the highest percentage of helicopters and World Rally Cars. Now, I'm not an economist, obviously, but I know like trees even stop growing in winter.
You know, as you say that, I actually remember like that little like Morris's thing, asking my mother younger, when I was younger, again, it was mad to go into kind of the construction side of things and architecture and like that when I was a kid. And I was asking her the innocent question, but man, where will they build all the houses by the time I'm an adult? Genuinely asking like, will there actually be space left? And I was thinking, this can't last.
Don't you go getting ecological about things. We're here to talk about anti-lag and all kinds of things.
Anti-lag. Just throw an envelope at it, it'll work.
Yeah. Every 2-litre World Rally Car saw action in Ireland, apart from a 307 WRC, which McGarrity had and never used. He was entered for the circuit 1 year and won, and he sold it again. And the Suzuki SX4 2-litre thing died a death after a year. Every other car, and I think it was only the Citroens were maybe the only ones that no one got privately here.
That's right, yeah.
And they were here,
Was there not two of them above?
Sorry, Matt?
You get to the Rally Forums bit there in shortly, that deserves a section all of itself.
Silly season of the boom years was the best.
If you want to be pedantic, go into the different evolutions of cars, which, because we are pedantic people, we have done before. You're still pretty high up. Like, we even saw the Step 2 Lancer and a 0.5 Lancer. Do you know what I mean? And there's even been a 0.4 Lancer come since at HeroSpec there a couple of years ago and stuff like that. Do you know, like, we've had pretty much everything. We didn't get some of the later 206s. I'm trying to think what else. We're picking here or we're splitting here.
We've had most evolutions of a Hyundai Desert for what wasn't a very popular car here.
Yeah.
We've had them all.
This will tell you, like, Ollie O'Donovan. Does anyone remember Ollie O'Donovan?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's rally crossing now.
Yeah, we do, but, like, you know, say it, you know, people might, Jesus, yeah, vaguely remember him. Ollie O'Donovan had an accent in Clare in 2002 in a national round. What the fuck is going on here? And somebody went and made a diorama of it. Do you remember that? Xavier McCartan, Zev's rally models or whatever they were back in the day. Like, that's actually another point. Actually, a good barometer of how fun silly things got was to look at a national entry round or a national round entry, because, like, you know, every international pretty much was oversubscribed. Forestry was booming in by proxy because people just had these cars and just wanted to rally them. Like,
which also, Mars, think about it. It actually was the reason why we were even able to start when I started rallying, was when they brought in the junior category to help alleviate.
And then in the first year there was juniors and super 1600 Pumas.
That's right. Yeah.
We only had this conversation on the phone earlier about Pumas and
lads.
Things landing on into the juniors, you know.
You know what?
1400.
Do you know what? There's one regret I have is that I wasn't in my I wasn't 20 or 21 and out of college at this time.
Like, the reality of it was, like, I was in college at the time, and it was funny because liking rallying was always almost like a kind of a dirty secret. Like, you know, everyone was into the Premier League. I was into the Premier League, but rallying was the thing that was going on in the background. We had so much of your time invested in studying and partying at the time. Rally forums and things like that were your outlet. And on a Thursday night, you'd set the video recorder to tape RPM for, I think it was sponsored by Toyota or the YNZ or something on RT at the time. But it was bizarre the amount of people who quietly kind of found out, oh, you're into the rallying as well. Yeah. And it was all part of, like, we talk about the 2001 WRC in the last series. In Ireland, within that era, there was a lot of people in colleges as well. I don't know, did you notice in your times in Sligo and in Cork that it almost became, there was a subculture of people who were really into rallying, you know, and current day rallying in colleges, where it probably was, it's probably not quite as much now.
Maybe, yeah. I went to college in Maynooth.
Awesome.
But even before that, like, yeah, even people in school now, there wouldn't have been that many. And of course, I never came from a motorsport house at all. Like, so, like, even like Connacht Motor Club to me was like, Jesus, like, no way would I ever be able to join that. I found rally forums somehow, and it was something else before that. There was RAL.ly as well. Remember that? Jonathan McDonald used to have it, like, uploading all the videos and stuff. So through the, it wasn't even Google then. What were the other search engines going around there? Lycos and Alta Vista and stuff like that. Remember the early?
What was the one that kind of, what was the video that, like you said, it was all mobile, the early mobile videos of stage clips. What was that website?
StageTimes.com.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
It was RAL.ly.
That could be it, yeah. Jeez, I forgot
about it. Used to be all like Northern Ireland Championship stuff and that have bits of clips from the circuit and stuff.
But as you mentioned that, like, you're talking about this, even school and college and stuff. Yeah, I even remember in primary school like that. Now, kind of my immediate family, there was no kind of motorsport connection, but I remember like maybe one or two of us in my primary school class trying to justify to the rest of the lads why rally cars were better than street racing cars.
Or wrestlers.
Or yeah, true. Yeah.
We also, like, if you look at it just in terms of media, like, there was Pace Notes. Pace Notes came out in 03, I'm going to say.
I think 2003. The first cover was Andy winning the Rally of the Lakes that year.
Oh, good man. Yeah, I still have it. I still have
actually have that as well. When it was used in paper format.
Paper, yeah. I still have
that's in the attic somewhere as well, yeah.
We also had Flat to the Mat, which came out a couple of years later.
There was about two editions a week of that, wasn't there?
The voice of the club, man.
It was good, no, Joyce. It was good to get
it
out.
You know what I used to love about it? I used to love the classified section. When I got to the age thinking that, cutting out the cars in the classified section, going, yeah, I'll have that now next year. And you're 16 years of age, thinking you're going to have a Group A Nova, and you're like, I can afford that now, no problem.
The
boom mentality was put into us, yet we were coming to the back end of it.
Yeah. Right, just on rally forums, right, we actually probably all kind of knew each other, the four of us, through rally forums long before we actually ever came across each other in person at rallies or whatever, you know. Everyone had their own, and that was the thing at rally forums. Like, nobody, well, I'd say nobody, I'd say 95% of people hid behind the username, which meant...
You had a Patrick Snyder's avatar.
I did.
Yeah. I actually used my real name. I was partial for getting into arguments with lads a lot. And
what were you at? Were you RS
1800? I was RS 1800, and my avatar was Rally Art.
Mine was the Maher's ex Finley coloured scheme Escort.
What was your name, Tommy?
Tarmac Timo, I think, or
Tarmac Timo. Nice. Yeah,
what was your other name, Alistair? Everyone had like two or three.
Tommy Too Far, probably, or something.
I actually know someone, right? And we only talked about it lately in Offrick. And I'd love to go back and dig it out. He had at least four different accounts, right? And what he used to do, right, when he was bored some evening, was he'd start to try one of his accounts, log in with another account, argue with himself on it, right? He might even jump in with a third account, right? 5 minutes, he'd go in and make a cup of tea. 5 minutes later, he'd come back and there'd be fucking carnage. There'd be fellas hopping off each other on it, and he'd just step back and just watch it unfold for the night.
Do you know what I love more than anything from tonight? I've actually logged into it for the first time, I'd say, in about 10 years.
What was the guy? There was another guy. There was a couple of guys. It was Trops from.
It was motorsport backwards.
Backwards. There was Trops. Yeah, motorsport backwards. Yeah. And there was another.
I have a fair idea who that was now, with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah.
Have we got the legal team?
Surely, can we put a request out there that people start commenting who hidden usernames were, just to find out. Because to be fair, like bringing up stories from back in that era, like Nesbitt brought up a lot of good details talking about stuff that you would never talk about at the time. Surely we can do it now.
There was a phase on where basically people were more or less told, give your real name on it or get out.
But that is eventually what happened. Like Donegal, what happened in Donegal in 2009, that led to a whole, about 6 months later, the CEO of Motorsport Ireland resigned, the Rallies Commission resigned, everything. And everyone was putting statements out on rally forums and coming straight out of meetings and putting stuff on before statements had been made. And there was legal letters flying left, right and centre between competitors that were involved. And that killed rally forums.
That was that 2008 or 2009?
2009, Donegal 2009, there was a photograph.
Let's not go there.
That's all we'll say. But that ended rally forums pretty much. Christmas 2009, there was really very little.
It had some good days since.
But
remember the French guy?
That was the peak. Oh, Philippe.
Philippe and his claim on Dennis Cronin's N3.
Calling people
Harry Potter, and that was mad.
Yeah.
I'd miss that though, wouldn't you?
But I'll be honest, I'd be quite open about it in that I have rally forums to thank for what bit of a run of having a career navigating that I have, because only for, I was on rally forums, it was around the end of 2009, start of 2010, I was keen to go see a World Rally event, and I put it up, said, what's the best way of going to see a World Rally event? And I got a message from Kieran Marshall in Killarney telling me that, yeah, we have a spare space in the car, we have a spare bed in the chalet. And before I knew it, I'd done a rally by the end of the year. And, you know, it's bizarre how big a community it can kind of, you know, condense itself down to something like that. Equally, I could have just been moped at Cork Airport.
There's a good chance of that happening anyway, Tommy.
I think like,
it's a fair point.
A lot to blame, you know, as well.
Yeah, before, it's a good point, Tommy.
Before us know each other. Like.
Before social media, it kind of was the only place you could go to discuss Irish rallying online. You know, like, you know what the point Art made there, where things got a bit too spicy and there was legal stuff flying around and things had kind of calmed down. But Jesus Christ, I dug up a few old threads there during the week as part of the research for this. Like, holy fuck, there was some shite being talked. Like, I mean, so we didn't know any better. Like, we were all kids really at the time. Like,
and there was a thread, if I remember rightly, like rally drivers and their day jobs. It was a whole thread, but just like you knew that couldn't have been that person's job, what they were doing, or fellas plainly just didn't want their business known. But it was, everyone was kind of early 2000s was still a bit naive online about what you could say or couldn't say and stuff. Looking back now, it was nuts.
I remember a thread one night on it where it was the best looking female navigator, or who was the best looking wife of the drivers. It was, I remember looking through it and I was like, all right, a few fair points here, but really, lads, this is wrong. But when you look at it in some ways, like rally forums as a kind of a life form of its own was probably better in some ways than social media, because it was all conducted within the out of control environment that was rally forums, not in public view of social media.
There was no outsiders.
Exactly.
That was the thing. Like, even there's, it crops up, and again, it came up in a video I saw recently. One of the Rally Irelands, maybe in 07 or 09, and it's footage of a stage outside somewhere in Fermanagh. But there's a dispute between spectators and residents about someone has a flag. But the next thing, the comment goes, oh, that'll be up on rally forums in the morning. Like, that was the thing people said. Like, it wasn't, it'll be up on Facebook or whatever. This was like, it's just going here at this corner of the internet for certain people to talk about.
Yeah.
It was mental.
But like, it definitely helped in building the hype at the time. And again, you know, we got 2001 home impressionable we were at that age. We were still, at this time, you know, in our teens or whatever, we're still very, very much influenced by, you know, the hype around the events and stuff like that. And there was an awful lot of it, even though 95% of it was lies. But anyway, it still helped. And it was, in its own way, it was cool because it helped to build a buzz. And sure, we didn't on a ditch talking about Kevin Lynch's two Zaras that were due to arrive and all this stuff to carry on, you know. And then, you know, like, you actually wouldn't know who had what in some cases until scrutiny happened, which kind of, you know, nowadays, like with social media, everything is online, bang, done.
That's it, you can't even move your car to go get tracking done and someone knows, someone spots a car somewhere. So, like, having, as you said, the old saying, don't let the facts spoil the hype. Having the muddle of information coming to an event going, what's going to turn up here? Am I going to see four Zaras from West Cork coming up here?
I looked at a few old programs of rallies from that time, and even a good few of the top 20, because fellas were buying and selling cars left, right, and centre, they'd be TBA. Like, you just don't see that in the top 10 or 20 anymore. Fellas pegging in an entry going, yeah, I'll buy a world rally car next.
It was mad, right? And I think, It definitely did help. It probably, some of the outright slander that was going on was probably you know, it probably wasn't sustainable, like Art, as you said.
Noel 157, I think, was somebody who you'd always look out for in a thread, because his contribution, like, it's just picking somebody out there that you'd always find some people. It was kind of like you had to sift through a lot of mud to get the gold, you know, and like there's a, you know, plenty of people you'd always look on to see what their opinions were and what their thoughts were, because you were like, yeah, that's someone who, you know, you could probably have a rational discussion with, or he's making a good point. But you had to sift through a lot of stuff to get to that at times. And like, does anyone remember him? No, 157.
He was a moderator, or became a moderator eventually.
Yeah, he seemed to be a man who was almost, got the feeling he was fairly high up somewhere in something. A lot of his info was very good at times.
But as you said, yeah, like very kind of a lot of sensible approaches. And sometimes there was a lot of shit being talked. A lot of shit been slung at people, and there was lads like that now who come in and clean it all up.
So like, you know, I remember one thing that used to be talked about an awful lot, and like obviously we'd still talk about it ourselves, how close was the pace in Ireland compared to the world, said, and that was one big topic coming up to the two WRC events, but especially the first one, because the first one came right towards the tail end of the craziness, you know, and I think we had one of the highest amounts of WRC cars ever started or entered a WRC event for Rally Ireland 2007. But I think a lot of people's eyes got opened in 2007 whenever the Vaux teams came over to
there was naive suggestions, I think, at the time, even that, oh, Subaru might pick like a local specialist for Ireland, you know, like they'd have Andrea Aghini or someone like obviously that didn't happen. It didn't have to happen because there was that many of the cars here anyway.
But again, sorry, so do you want to finish up there?
Yeah, but like Galway 07 was the worst thing that could have happened, where Granholm was just going to clapping his way around still fairly quickly, and Donnelly was running him close and went off. And that kind of, and then the first day at Donegal, Loeb was like third or fourth. And it was like, oh, these fellas can't handle it here. And then the fastest I've ever seen a rally car go was Loeb on the Saturday and Sunday of Donegal that year. Like in terms of the difference of what was after him on the road. I've never seen anything like it before or since in terms of a gulf of pace. I've seen a fair bit of rallying.
I had the same experience as you mentioned there. I actually remember that day clearly on Kilnamartry just after the village. I was marshalling at that point, kind of a downhill section, I think into a kind of a tree right through a junction. And to this day, I'll never forget the feeling I had after Loeb and Sordo passed down the hill. And I remember looking and going, what in the name of Christ am I into this sport for? This is mental. Like that now, Joe, well used to seeing world cars, but the level, it was just, you can't describe it like.
But I remember attending the same rally, and the first, because obviously Sordo was there in the Zara. Once the first five had gone through, the first three with the two Citroens and Mick O'Hervin and the Focus, they were on a different level. You had Donnelly and Higgins, to be fair, weren't a whole pile sore, but the gap between an aged customer car and a works car was visible. Like, the guys were driving their cars to limits.
And tyres.
Yeah.
And you're on about killing them after there, William. I'd love to see Loeb's in car. There's an in car of Higgins.
That's a fantastic in car.
On YouTube, Loeb took 30 seconds off.
It's mental. And
like, you look at, now I know Higgins maybe lost like 6 or 7 seconds at the end when he catches Mikhail and Mikhail's spun. But like, you go, where was there 30 seconds in that? Like,
it's crazy.
I think there were some good yardsticks there that year anyway. Like, Galway is actually on the background here on the TV. And okay, Granholm was over to do a test, right, to warm up. Well, he was going hard. And like, the two boys were probably, wasn't much between them. The gap ahead of everyone else.
I actually enjoyed the Cork 20 in 2007 a lot more than I did Rally Ireland that year, because it was dry and stuff like that. It just seemed to stay.
It was actually unbelievable weather for the Cork 20.
It was. It was unreal. It was just like an Indian summer. But my abiding memory is Loeb being a gear higher everywhere. Just everywhere. And I'm talking like even over Sordo, like, you know, the men, I remember looking at one corner on the Sunday morning and thinking, okay, well, that's the fastest anyone could possibly ever get around there. You know, but it was is the pure lob style where the slide was the corner, if you get me. Like, he wasn't sliding as a reaction, he was sliding because it was that was his approach, but the car was straight by the apex and he was powering up the road, and I don't think anyone else came, you know, within 10 miles an hour of what he was doing around that corner. It was aft is the only way I can describe what he was doing. But anyway, that was a big topic of contention back in the day, whether Irish lads. And to be fair, we did kind of trick ourselves into thinking, yeah, they'll be there or thereabouts. As you said, the Donnelly and Galway thing did kind of maybe lull us into a bit of a...
Yeah, and Ian Greer going over to Luxembourg and winning a European championship event at the time. But in hindsight, the entry there wasn't that strong. The European championship was on a downward curve. It wasn't like he went and he won Ypres, like, even though he was quick enough there too, I think, until he stopped.
But like the other side of that kind as well, though, is that you look at, say, some of the drivers that we had visit Ireland in that period of the Celtic Tiger era. We had Tapio Laukkanen over. We had Yari Mäkiläinen in his early days in the BRC. A lot of the BRC guys were.
There was another year in Cork.
Peter Schoen and Eric Wavers came over, yeah.
Yeah, and Marco Martin and Higgins came over in 2S9s. Yeah. I think
Guy Wilkes was there as well.
That was the year Guy Wilkes and Marco Martin that year. That was 06.
06, yeah. Nisbet was.
I remember that's when they had Park Farmer down to the showgrounds in Cork.
Yeah.
Because I actually remember doing time out that morning.
And Wilkes had the Richard Hammond livery on the car.
Yeah, we love you, hamster.
And then he put it into Bale at an awful speed.
But
2007, when you had Mark Higgins and Chris Meek competing on a few events, like, you had drive like Mark Higgins, it could be argued he was probably, he's not a frontline world championship driver, he'd probably be a second division world championship driver in some regards, as in he probably should have got a break at some stage and would probably made a fine number two driver in the world championship. Like, that was a great yardstick, but then you have the likes of Chris Meek, whose star was on the up at the time, and like the onboard that everyone watches is the, do you know the one in the Ulster when he's on slicks in the wet?
Oh, straight. Man!
But okay, he blew a lot of the guys away there. But even when you look back to the circuit and he's in the S9, and
get it right, Tammy. Jesus, man.
Was that an S11?
2007, yeah. LC54 WRC. She was the only one with a roof vent in Ireland at the time.
But remember,
is LC54? She's been around a fair bit.
GC was the yellow one, the
Pirelli car, and Wilkes used a Pirelli in 2007. Okay, let's.
But it's some truck.
Some truck.
That's my favorite clip of that whole year. One of my favorite clips is that clip because. Just that thing of, oh, we're not looking at the times, and the camera was left on inside in the car. It's a fantastic piece of footage.
What about the one, what year was it in the Clio? Was it Donegal or
Clare? The following year, 2008.
The bubble was burst.
But you remember, was it Donegal or Clare who was tearing up, and he has the sensors flashing on the dash, and you can hear, and you can just hear me going, it's just a sensor, and he's just absolutely staying on it. Like,
there's two of those. That's the Knock Allo one, yeah. And I think Dave Minehan was in with him for that one.
Yeah.
And then the Miles Gap in car is there. And I only watched it again, that in car thread I had on Twitter there, and I threw that Meek one up. It's the same, it's just not in good quality. It could do with a re-upload.
Yeah, yeah.
But just coming up to the gap, Nagel changes pace notebooks. It's class if you watch it. About like 300 to the gap, and he just pulls the new.
You know, actually, on that point, I think was it 2007. Was actually the year I got my competition license, and went up to Rally School Ireland. And the lad I had in the day was Chris Meek.
I'll actually check here now, William. When you got your competition license?
Yeah.
That's the power. Yeah, no, but you still get one again.
Is this GDPR compliant?
But he was.
I did not give my consent for this.
he was an instructor in Rally School Ireland.
Yeah, because I remember I went up there and there was about 30 odd lads up there, and I think I was the youngest at the time there. And I went going up, and he was in. I didn't realize he was teaching there, and thinking, Jesus Christ, please God, please let me get into the car with Chris, please, please, please. And lo and behold, worked out. Yeah. Unbelievable. You remember at that age then you're what, 17?
I worked there for a while subsequently for a year or two back in 2013, 2014 or whatever. And he used
applied to replace you.
Did you? Oh, there you go. He used to call in the odd time. But that time he won the Ulster. He was working in Rally School Ireland, but he used to cycle from Dungannon to Monaghan to work and cycle back. Mental.
Jesus, some going.
But Andreas Mikkelsen, you know, even like came here. Like the people.
06, think,
wasn't it? Yeah, 07. But like, I think.
Some men to dog a recce car.
some men to dog a Focus as well, the amount of panel damage it used to be on. But what you'd have to say is that we were viewed probably by the wider world as a great place to kind of go and test yourself a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Because like, Mikkelsen came over to do rallies here, obviously to try and, you know, gauge his pace. And obviously he's gone on to bigger things since. And obviously Chris Meek was here to keep the hand in and obviously just maintain a profile. Like, yeah. The profile of the championship was high. Like Pirelli being a title sponsor was massive.
Yeah, the Pirelli stickers. I actually got it. I think I still might have an unused one of them at home, but they got onto the tractors and everything in the yard. There were so many of them floating around. I think there's still one hanging off of their life.
This is one problem I always had at the Finnish ramps at that age.
Pirelli girls.
Never got a Pirelli. No, the Pirelli girls.
Big Pirelli foam hands.
I've loads of them. I've loads of the foam hands. But the caps. I never got my hand. They're handing out caps one day. I think it was the Lakes. And I was like, I'm not leaving here without a bloody baseball cap. I don't care that you're a model. Give me the bloody hat. No, not a hope.
Can someone at Pirelli arrange for us to get some hats?
You'll just have to win the rally someday.
Yeah. We'll have to win a retro. We'll have a boom retro.
Just to go back to the pace sort of topic. Okay, we just kind of, we said, the actual World Championship boys came over and kind of quietened a lot of the talk about our lads being, you know, at that pace. But having said that, the pace was actually pretty fucking serious, especially on the tarmac runs. I mean, if you look at some of the footage from the mid-2000s, Nesbitt's on boards were always hectic anyway because the pace notes were so fucking sketchy. And although he's explained that, although... It's kind of hard to know what to make of it. But anyway,
can that be explained? Really,
I don't know.
It makes less sense since he explained it.
It's more confusing now. Yeah. But you'd see it on the stages. The first few cars did look to be pushing, and like a World Rally car is an awesome bit of kit, and to get them to slide requires pretty big commitment. You know, they are, I've been in spins and stuff like that, and you get the sense that, oh my god, if someone crashes this, they're a fucking idiot. But you know,
fellas weren't afraid to hit them back then, as well, because there was, and it didn't matter where you were running in the field, by the way, fellas didn't care if they hit it because it'd be fixed up. The time Donnelly crashed on the circuit, like rolled the oak into a ball, and like two weeks later, I think.
Yeah,
so he crashed on the circuit on the Saturday, I think.
Was he out in the Easter stages on the Monday?
He did the Easter stages the following day in the Toyota Celica and won it. And then the Impreza got fixed up 2 weeks later. Like the paint was barely dry. He won the Lakes.
Yeah.
Crazy.
The best one I remember was, I think, now I could be wrong, I heard this story that, and I think it's right, Tim McNulty, he hit the back of the S7 one time and blew the boot lid off it. And I don't know how true this is. He had to get, while the lads was working for him, was doing service. He told him, I need the boot lid off your road car. Your man had a Subaru Impreza road car. They took whip the boot off of your man's Impreza WRX. That was because you often see the photos of the car with the blue boot lid. That was off a road car.
But you remember, wasn't there a story where he had an issue with a windscreen? And I think did he roll the car one event on a Saturday?
Jim Clark,
was that the one where
coming down the straight and it just...
No, that was Donnelly. That was Donnelly with the Perspex.
Donnelly with the Perspex screen.
Or McNulty, where Donnelly, the McGarity's helicopter over the pro drive to get a windscreen and back.
Oh my god, I myself and McNulty. Well, actually, McNulty and his crew of cohorts and me and one of the lads got into a bit of an argument. After the Lakes one year, after the prize giving, we probably shouldn't have been there. We were definitely underage. We definitely shouldn't have been drunk. And we had a taxi got, and I remember being physically manhandled out of the taxi by McNulty. And he had
big man, he's a large man.
I haven't seen eye to eye since.
Morris, you have a habit of getting into
he's about a foot taller than you.
Step out, Tim, if you're listening, step out for belts. Step out.
But to be every time I see Big Tim, I just keep thinking of the character in Days of Thunder, you know, Big Tim, the car dealer. But
see him around Dublin City Centre a bit now.
What killed me?
He was smart about when things went wallop.
He just left the country. What killed me about that whole incident then was that the other fellow that was with me and also involved in the not an altercation, but the dispute about the taxi, which we absolutely had rights though, we called it. Anyway, the other lad had bought a McNulty jacket the same weekend, I'm sure. And because he was so mean, he still wore it after the event. You know, after the whole issue, like he was like, no, I paid for it, no, I'm wearing it. And he must have worn it for 3 years after the fucker. But anyway.
I remember the year getting one of them thinking I was like, do you know what? Now I'm cool.
Yeah, if someone says boom to me now, I just think of Donnelly jackets and rigger boots.
Donnelly, in fairness to Donnelly, they got the merch right. Like,
oh man, they were everywhere.
I remember seeing a Donnelly jacket one night in Ruby's in Waterford. I was out on a Sunday night, just fresh off the bus. Shouldn't have been out, but should have been in Diggs. And
I saw a few of them at the Plowing last year as well, actually.
No, they're almost a collector's item probably at this stage. Do you know, they haven't probably got used as rags. But anyway, go back to the whole car stuff. I remember whenever Charlie was using the Eugene's car in the National Championship 05, I'd say, and he literally just threw it at Kerry there 1 year.
What a brilliant accident.
An absolutely monumental crash, right? And
yeah. Every man had at least one or two plane crashes a year then, like.
Yeah, no, but Charlie had this huge one, and Eugene had to buy another car for the legs, and he turned up in it, and that was it. And there was nothing more said about it, and then all of a sudden there was two Corollas. And I know, right, okay, they were an outdated car back then, but
they were developed well.
They weren't free to run. They were still a fucking WRC car. They still had WRC car rebuild costs and running costs and whatever the case is. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I know we've kind of jumped back and forward a lot there now with various things, but there's so much. It was just a mad time, really, wasn't it? There was like the maddest
I ever remember. Donegal 2007, the year Loeb was there. And you know they have service in Milford. I do not know to this day why they have service in Milford on the Saturday and Sunday. It just chocks up the whole town. It's only 10 kilometres outside Letterkenny. Like it's not for saving road miles. Yeah. And it blocks everything coming up. But the hotel on the left as you come in, it used to be the Milford Inn. It's renamed since it was closed and reopened. There was a helicopter car park there and there was 30 helicopters in.
I actually remember that as well, because I think the Friday morning. I ended up missing the Friday stages because the car we borrowed or someone broke down. We had to go to Letterkenny Airport, get a rental, come back. I think one says that even we did the service. Was that Saturday instead of Milford? I remember looking
Saturday across, and Sunday service goes out to Milford, yeah.
And looking across the road and I remember looking at all the helicopters going, what in the name of Christ?
And
there was 30, because I remember myself and my dad counted them. And there was where we were watching on the Sunday, then the next day, it was somewhere out around, maybe it wasn't the Sunday, maybe it was Saturday. It was near Muckish. You were at the back of Muckish, whatever stage it was. And a helicopter landed down and a couple of boys got out of it, drinking cans of Bulmers or whatever. And they came over, they were watching, and we were chatting to them. And they were just a gang of boys from Donegal, clasterers, and they each like chipped in, you know, a grand or whatever for the weekend for a pilot to fly them around. Sir, it's the only way to see this rally. I was just like, Christ above, this is mental. That's probably the most boom thing I think I can remember. Just
if only we knew the money to get ahead of that. Coming to an end just to capture those moments would have been unbelievable.
what would have been your favourite event looking back at it? You know, ones that you got to witness.
That Donegal 2006, not the 07 one, Donegal 06.
I'd have to agree with that there. I think 06 was probably one of the best events, I think, of the time. There was a massive, massive entry. McCrea was there in the Metro. I know 07 we'd love and whatever, but there was an awful lot of shit that went on before the start of the the event in 07. A lot of people withdrew and stuff like that. 06, I think, had it all. You know, it had like you had Andrew Nesbitt has told the story in KG's podcast, which, by the way, go and listen to it if you haven't done so already. It's very good. About getting the Mitsubishi over and Mark Higgins in the other car and all that kind of stuff. Matthew Wilson was over in Steve Perez's Focus. There was Garrett McHale. There was all this FIA seeding shit going on as well because of the drivers that were involved.
Was that the year Wilson had the big off?
No,
there was the previous one. That was 04. Yeah, he kind of went backwards into Don't Was the Ocean at one point. Yeah. But yeah, that event had a lot going for it, I think. You're right, Art. I think that was probably...
If it had better weather, I would have said it was probably the best one. But I think in terms of... I remember pace even down the field was ridiculous. Like, every fella was fighting for it. I think, was that the first... Came up there recently enough. Might have been the first Donegal Manus Kelly did in the yellow Corolla. Won his class. It was a good Donegal for a lot of reasons.
When you look at the volume of Group N cars, even that were in the field, if you take away the World Rally cars, Group A cars that were, you know, just behind in the technology spec, and like, then Group N.
Again, with the benefit of hindsight, like, to run a Group N car and run a Group N car well, we now know that is quite expensive.
Yeah.
Like, just in terms of like
the fuel alone, even,
like fuel, the bonnet and wings for like a proper Evo 9 is like 900 quid or something.
Yeah,
something ridiculous.
But, as you said, so, remember at the time like that, like the same kind of attitude of fucking Group N's, or else you'd wait till the modifieds are coming. You wouldn't pay attention. Whereas now as you get older, a bit kind of more respectable things. You
but know, like there were proper, there were like ADR built Group N cars. Someone
Morrow,
definitely
guys
had,
like that.
Yeah, someone at one stage definitely. Tom Walkinshaw Racing built a couple of Evo 9s, and someone had one of them here. I think they were
PJ McGrath had it actually.
Yeah. What years was the Evo Challenge here? Do you remember in Ireland and the UK? And that was a brilliant championship.
That was 03 or 05. That went on for a few years. Rory Gallagher won one of the first ones. In like 04, 05, and it continued.
I remember as a teenager aspiring, thinking something I could get there during a couple of years, thinking, sure, yeah, that's doable. That's an entry level championship.
And the Group N, especially the likes of the Evo 9, things like that, you're the last of those, they struck me as something that probably wasn't a million miles away from a Group A car from 10 years previous.
Yeah,
you know, 100%.
They were a bit heavier and stuff, and they probably didn't stop as well. But you know, they definitely were a very, very sort of car, and they were being pushed. You know, there was a lot of very quick guys.
The likes of Colin Murphy there. Competitive part of the championship, but National Jennings, and Tarmac, wasn't it? The National Championship and Tarmac. The Group N there for a couple of years was a brilliant. Like the time when Colin Murphy was around from Limerick,
super driver,
fantastic. Unbelievable.
You have a story, Art, about somebody purchasing a couple of Group N cars, do you?
Yeah, I won't say the name, but they're a builder who no longer rallies. And they went over
to down.
they went over to ProDrive with like two vans and two builder's trailers, like still covered in cement, bought two brand new Group N cars, ratchet strapped them to the builder trailers, paid for them in cash and drove home.
Yeah, there you go. Boom. There's the boom.
Like, crazy stuff.
There's
the blammo. This week's episode sponsored by Michael Bay.
But it couldn't be more at odds with what we thought the sport was like. You know, looking at him from the outside to a degree, it looked so glamorous, looked so cool and edgy. The RPM footage, you know, with the soundtracks of, you know, the Uncle remix of FEAR by Ian Brown, that kind of stuff was what we imaged rallying as being. It's this edgy, indie, cool thing.
That brings us.
It's so sad that it's gone a little bit away from that.
Actually, I've one more boom one as well. If you look back through the photos, you'll figure out who it is. If you look at photos from Donegal, funny enough, Donegal 2009, they ran a funny version of Nakala that year, and after the church where the big jump is, they continued on. Instead of going square right after that, they continued on down, and there is a launch pad of a jump. And there's a couple of photos from it, I think, on EWRC. Emer Brendan has them from it. I went there watching. It was one of the most maddest jumps I was ever at. I remember looking back then at the photos, and there was a driver that year in an S11, and the S11 bumper, the corners were like a little bit rounded, as if there was like something
bulbous thing inside of it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So like in the little panel, like where the spotlight would be or whatever, there was like these holes, but they weren't there like at the finish or at the start of the event where the car would be scrutineered. The driver apparently was very sore on brakes. So they had a little brake duct going in from the bumper in behind. So just like an Irish guy was too hard on an S11's brake, so they had to come up with some way around the homologation to do this and fix it at the end of the rally. The stuff that was going on was just, and he probably, the same person probably had an S9 sitting on a trailer for spares.
Out the back of the house, not even indoors.
Tommy mentioned RPM, and that brings us kind of nicely onto the next point. RPM was, and there's no other way to describe it, brilliant. In this time, RPM was always great. To give, you know, Plum and the team all the credit, you know, they really did a fantastic job all the way up along. But something about this era, and it was coming in the late 90s, I'm not sure it was Chris Plum's son might have been involved in terms of the music choice and that kind of stuff, right? But they started using the likes of, you know, I remember Saltwater, Chicane being used in Donegal 99, class.
Era-defining music for an era-defining
But it's something we've spoken about a lot when we're in person, and the different things and links you'll send. I think we all have the similar taste of music from that era, and I actually think, well, we're probably listening to it anyway, but that connection between RPM and rallying keeps it alive now. Do you know what I mean? You'll get a link of a random song that no one knows, and you go, oh yeah, sure, that's Galway 2006. That's what happens to me in my head when I hear this.
I only heard one the other day. I saved it on Spotify, whatever it was.
It wasn't Little Fluffy Clouds by The Orb, because I just keep thinking of Glenn
Village. It exactly was that very song. I couldn't believe it.
It's always in my head. Just
was it Donegal 1999.
And myself and Morris were only talking about Ian Brown a couple of weeks ago, and I said the first time I heard Ian Brown was Ian Brown in an RPM was in 98 Donegal. They used Can't See Me off the Unfinished Monkey Business album for the 98 Donegal. It's just, It all became so synonymous, and like that kind of production level.
There must have been some cursed monkey claw in Manchester around that time that they all got brilliant music, but they've all come out the last like year has been absolute
wankers.
Apart from Steve Ryder, who's actually come out of it fairly well.
Yeah.
Or not Steve Ryder, Sean Ryder. Steve Ryder. So.
Ryder off Grandstand. I'm not having a bad word against
Sean Ryder. Who would have thunk it? Yeah. Out of all the people to come out.
Most drugs.
The man who, maybe that was it. Maybe the amount of drugs he took just removed a lot of the bad bits out of his brain. We can only hope. Anyway,
Shatner's bassoon, I believe, is the area.
Shatner's bassoon, yeah. But anyway, to be fair, like some of the sequences in RPM are iconic. As part of this, and in fairness, a friend of ours, James Lowry, has done put up a good few old clips there from RPM back in the day. There's a clip from Donegal 2004, and it's the build-up to Knockalla on the Saturday, the second run of Knockalla when it's wet, right? And they use an Uncle remix of Ian Brown's...
Dolphins Monkeys, is it?
Yeah, that's the tune, right? And it's building up to it, and there's lots of people on the slicks. It's pissing rain. You know, you can...
Nesbitt out with the Stanley knife.
Yeah. That's it. And people, you know, it's properly raining as well. Like, and the tune in the background, and Gary Gillespie is doing the voiceover for it. And it builds up, and right where where the tune kind of drops is Donnelly taking off after startling. Man, even now it fucking makes me.
The hairs on your arm still go.
All the guys waiting there, and the stage commander going, "If you want to go, we'll go."
Yeah. No,
or even even later into it, was it the start of the 06 season? What's the tune that had? Was it the Kooks?
Oh yeah,
the start of Galway.
Yeah, another one.
I actually made a playlist that has an awful lot of RPMs tunes from back in the day, and as much as I could find now, and I'm still
Battle Axe.
Yeah, that's my old reliable on Spotify.
Yeah, I still if I come across an all around somewhere with the music, you know, legible on it, like I'll throw Shazam on it and try and pull a tune off it. Like you'd be.
Or let's take one back. It was a Killarney 05 or 06 where they had the Living for the Weekend.
Yeah. Clattering into bales at 100 miles an hour. Yeah.
The
McRae sequence in the Metro with Map of the Problematique by Muse is probably one of the best intros to RPM I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
No, it is magic. Like everything.
Come back, RPM.
Sparkly, crazy.
That was a brilliant one. The circuit, yeah. I don't know.
God, we're losers.
I don't know how they got around the rights, because I know now uploading the RPM archive stuff that we have, and we're still uploading them every Thursday. YouTube throws up a copyright infringement thing, so sometimes you can fudge the music or edit it out so that it doesn't affect it or whatever. I don't know how they did that at the time. Did they pay for it and have it? Because when you buy the DVDs of that, they kind of had the music chopped out of it. And I don't know if they'd done a deal with a record company or something.
I think it did add that extra dimension to it. Now, it would have been great even without it, but like it's influenced a lot of our musical tastes. I think you know, as people our age know, you can probably deride some of the tunes that were around at the time, and people do, as landfill indie, which is something you.
No, I'm not having that.
Clubs.
Tommy's walked off. Tommy's walked off the podcast.
Yeah, Tommy.
I know for a fact as well. Clubs were paying big money for the television coverage that time. Like,
yeah,
clubs will never pay that money again.
Yeah,
probably quite rightly, but they paid huge money then.
Even look at the national championship with On the Limit Sports. Sure, was there an episode every week? Saturday mornings, TV3?
Yeah.
Near enough, David, because he had the forestry and he had...
That's right. It was one of my favourite things to do with the weekend, Joe. Get up on a Saturday morning and you'd be watching National Championship and Forestry Championship.
Rallycross and Menna Motors.
A hidden treasure is Rallymax TV by Terry Hegarty and the guys of SBS Productions.
That was savage. Nahara.
Yeah, that's a hidden treasure. If there's a lot of the broadcasts are available on YouTube to watch, because they made that for Sky Sports, and it was all edited in the BBC suite in the Armour Road, Terry was telling me. And we're taking this opportunity to tell Terry, get the rest of them and put them out online. We want to see them, because they're fantastic.
They're unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Terry's his own worst critic on that too, because they're a lot better than Terry says they're really, really good.
Let's just kind of step back there now. Look at kind of the combination of stuff we're talking about from the boom years. You had Best Cars the minute they're off a world championship event arriving over here.
Yeah.
Massive professional teams. And fair enough, a lot of guys who are running full-time businesses now would have grown at that time as well.
Stan Harper was running nearly 20 cars at a time.
Everyone knows the best time to buy a rally car is just as it finishes the finish ramp of one rally. So that's probably why you'd see a lot of world events.
Like the standard of the TV production, the quality of the kind of both national and Irish tarmac, the scale of the events. Like, will you ever see it again?
No.
I don't think we're... I think the R5...
Do you know what the problem is now? Hang on now. We're like... Our lads now who talk about the 80s, and I know they were mint and they were class as well, but we'll be like that now with the boom years. No matter what happens,
you'll never have that level of money again. You might have that level of competition again, 100%.
No, the ostentatious spending and just the sheer fucking brashness of what was going on, right? And there was an awful lot of bullshit going on.
I'd love that. As well.
there was, like, you still hear stories come out today, like, about the crack that was going on behind the scenes, that it was hairy enough, well, a lot of it, like, you know. It probably won't happen again, like.
A few years ago, before, remember, like, 2 or 3 years ago, there was, before coronavirus, there was Aussie flu. Remember, there was a bad dose of, like, Aussie flu going on, like, 2 or 3 years ago. And I got it. It was the first time I ever had bad flu. And I went to a doctor's here in Kildare, where I'm living now. And I went and paid, like, fucking 50 quid or whatever for the doctor to tell me I was sick and did a load of antibiotics or whatever. And I went into the chemist. And I kind of half recognized your man behind the counter. And I was like, I know you. Anyway, he gave me the thing and I went away. And I went, it turned out he was a rally driver once upon a time, and a company director, and couldn't practice in Northern Ireland, but was practicing down here. And I got that off him, and I was like, you shouldn't be allowed to be in business in the north, and you're giving me my antibiotics here. Mad stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where, I don't know, some of that, so that part of the whole Celtic Tiger thing and motorsport.
But it's a good point there. To be fair, and like, it's something, to be fair, look, we're looking back on it with fondness and talking about the great time of the sport, but as you said, people did lose the run of themselves. There was a lot of, as you said, a lot of stuff happened. A lot of businesses went to the wall. A lot of people were, like I said, and not even just rallying. People went crazy.
And secondary, like, suppliers, you know, got shafted. Like,
yeah, people's moral compass was all out.
Yeah, another person, again, doing a bit of research. And all the articles are out there, like, if people want to read them. A company director struck off for 15 years. And 6 months before it went bust, he bought a brand new helicopter, bought a brand new rally car, had a new suit every rally. Then they had to pay $10,000 to an employee who they said wasn't an employee, and they fabricated paperwork so that they could fire him, and they didn't fire him. And that rallying didn't mean anything to some people at that time. It still means a lot to us.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people there were rally cars at that time, and Group N car or big money cars.
Yeah. It was their out of the choice.
Big boom and bluster and got, and rallying didn't mean anything to them.
It was just another fucking box to be ticked for them and Joe, all the other fucking shite that were at. Like,
yeah. Was it just another networking opportunity for some guys? Because, like, if you look at, did it fill the gap where Jordan Grand Prix ended? That bandwagon thing that rich lads went off and followed.
But no, think about it, Tommy. Let's call a spade a spade. It's a great way to get rid of money.
Yeah.
The best way.
It's a fantastic way to get rid of it.
It's like the old fashioned statement, like, how do you get 2 million in motorsport, or 1 million in motorsport? Start out with 2 million. Yeah. Like, it's, remember now, you're talking about a time where there was a lot of dodgy shit going on in the country, a lot of cash, a lot of messing. It was a great way to spend it. Let's call a spade a spade.
Not in Bevan being basted in gravy.
Yeah.
I don't see it as much now because I live in Kildare, and you're all in Munster, pretty much, I think. Where are you living now, Tommy?
Carrick on Shore.
I like the way you looked around there.
Topically. Yeah, as if the room would tell you. But when you get up, there was, I think it was it Section 42? It was a grant for developers, but it was just in the border, Midland and West region. So when you get up past Longford or up to where I am in Sligo or whatever, like, small towns, small estates that were just bet with houses that are never going to be filled and are still sitting there and all.
Yeah.
That's still there. I don't see it as much where I am now, but I still see, and I went into college, I started in 2006 and I came out in 2009. So it's kind of like I went in one country and came out in another.
Yeah.
And yet I still kind of look back at that time kind of fondly. I saw all the madness. I never kind of took part in it. It was like
we were all too young to kind of be properly involved in it. Like, but some of those houses?
It was like you were at a football match watching the hooligans, but you weren't part of it. Like,
yeah,
something like that.
The era, a lot of people, you know, when things went to fuck, a lot of people suffered an awful lot. There was an awful lot of hardship went on in this country following the boom, right? And look, okay, some of what people, you can say people lost their themselves. The other side of it is, you know, the institutions were totally in the wrong as well. There's a lot, it's hard enough to kind of really point the finger and say who was actually involved for it. But a lot of, you know, and a lot of people are still suffering to this day, you know, stuck in negative equity with a house.
I think we're actually quite lucky in regards to, okay, some of us were going into college while all this was going on. Some of us were already in college. We saw the benefits of it, but we were never able to actually reap the benefits of what was going on in the Celtic Tiger.
We didn't get a chance to lose a run of ourselves.
Yeah. So we never had anything to start with, so we didn't lose anything. But we didn't, yeah. You know, but we were left with the shit to deal with afterwards, you know?
Yeah. And it's one thing we haven't touched on as well, and it's something, and it's all okay, everyone got on the gravy train of the boom years are rallying, but something that was really kind of affected was down the field, the clubman level.
Did it not give birth to the single stage, though? It did, and it didn't.
The mad kind of thing was when things burst. So, like, you would have said the worst of the recession was 2011, 2012 kind of time. You were still filling entries. It was just with people who had a car in their shed and still had a bit of money. Like, if you look back at the numbers, they were still very strong back then.
Well, let's say 2011 was when my first stage rally was 2011, and it was still like a healthy entry list. Just no, like the scale of things were smaller. You didn't have the big server setups, the big trucks.
I look back there this afternoon. Donegal 2007, I think, stand to be corrected on. It was the last round of the Irish Tournament Championship. So it was the last Irish international rally that ran, where more cars started in the international section than the national.
Yeah.
Like there was 77 or something in one and 74 in the other. And then the balance tipped because older Civics and stuff fell out of homologation. And that level of support of international rallying will never come back because there just isn't the base level cars there anymore.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, I think, in the next week. Clubs are going to be asked, you know, to apply for 2021 dates. It should have happened back in April, but obviously that didn't happen and it was moved to June and now it's been moved out further again. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see what events run next year. And it's very hard to see international rallying here. It'll never get to the level it was then, where you had more cars entered in the international section.
Yeah.
Drivers with international licenses, that's a fair effort to get. Like you have to do a fair amount of rallies just to get an internet, because I upgraded to an international license this year because I would have lost my finishes from 2017. I'll never have any call for it, but if I win the lotto, I have it and I don't have to do six or seven rallies.
but
getting a medical every year to get an international license, stuff like that. Yeah. Like if you have a national license, you don't need another medical until you're 45.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that didn't seem to face people didn't
care. I just think just to I suppose look, we're looking at this, you know, it's a kind of a high level view of what went on. We're not going to get too much into the nitty gritty of it because you actually couldn't write a book about the crack. And
I hope someone does someday.
One of us might do it someday. Who knows? You know, we'll see. Like, but just to wrap things up. What was your favorite? I know Art mentioned favorite rally from the time. What was your favorite cars from the era? William, you go first.
So we'll take what? We'll take 2000, 2007.
Yeah, go for that period, I suppose. Yeah, what would you think?
It has to be one car for me that always stuck out was the S10 McGarrity had in the red one, but then obviously the 05 Focus. When who was the first one to bring it over?
Boland,
yeah.
the
wing.
Mikhail
had the 04 one, yeah. When he had the BRC that year.
Yeah, 04.
Or the 03.
Galway 04, the year.
That's right, yeah, with the Maxwell sponsorship on the front of it. So yeah. Those two for me are the biggest. 100%.
Tommy, what do you reckon?
I suppose I was in college for a lot of it, so the amount of events I got to go to were scattered enough. From the very start of it, my favourite, the best rally I attended, which was at the very beginning of all this, was the Cork 20 in 2000. I just have to get that out of the way. That it kind of books Marks in Cork. Cork 22,000, Cork 22,007. They were the two best rallies. The car I would have to pick, I'd probably be inclined to go for the Pirelli Subaru. Just such an iconic look, you know, very simple, very, and the fact that two fantastically talented drivers, you know, Meek got a win in it in the Ulster, and Mark Higgins, an underrated driver. But I would probably maybe also pick Donnelly's Corolla, just because, just shouting for the underdog, the guy with less technology, pulling the strings to make it happen. You know, you have to, you know, you have to admire that. Like, you know,
it's an iconic car from the era. It is. It is. It is an iconic boom car.
Yeah. Art, what do you reckon?
My favorite looking car was, who had it? Peter Herson's Hills P2000 when it was blue.
Very cool.
Blue and white. Yeah, that was a really cool
like
car.
License plate all over to something, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then he held on to that car for a while, and then it went like a weird European, like white, brown and yellow thing. But that P2000 eventually had paddle shift fitted to it. It was only like P2000 customer car with paddle shift. I was like, that was cool. Mm-hmm. Stephen Murphy had a Savage livery on an S11. It was like the Pro Fast, that the two colours of blue and the white.
He had that in Western, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the silver on it was that like luminous silver that lit up like when a flash bulb went off on it. That was pretty cool. And I had a fair bit of love in hindsight now for any lad who held on to like a 98 or a 99 car. There was a couple of Raymond Johnston had one up the north for a while, and Sean Gallagher had one. I think it went on fire in Tipperary one year. It might have been the same car.
Dennis Biggerstaff had a lot as well, didn't he, for a while?
Dennis Biggerstaff. He had chassis 001 and couldn't sell it for ages, and now it's worth
a fortune, like, yeah.
Yeah. So any of those kind of ones I like, but I really like the Herson one. That just looked cool.
I think I'm going to go for Nesbitt's Donegal 2006 Lancer. I think that for me sums up.
Yeah.
If you could pick one car and one event, probably, and one driver even, if we're going to go that far, that summed up the whole era. It's that combination there.
He certainly made it his era. It's
excess on every level.
It was the level higher. It was the level that you afford to go to at a time where you shouldn't be.
Yeah,
you shouldn't have got that level, but you know what? Thank God we did.
I have a big love for those lances anyway. They're so weird looking, and they sound mad and stuff.
There's a brilliant Ryan Rally Videos has it on YouTube, and it's on the Saturday morning of whatever. I think the stage is Carrick Mountain, I could be wrong, but it's off the start line. And he has the first like 20 cars or whatever on launch. So after the Friday, I think Kevin Lynch was leading. Kevin Lynch, first man on the road. And he goes off, and then you have the Lancers, and you have a couple of Corollas, just like with the most sensational gear cut on the launch. Ah, it's mental. But it's Ryan Rally Videos.
Launch Control or something.
Launch Control, I think.
Yeah,
it's
Launch Control. Yeah, I was watching
it this morning. Actually, it's called Launch
Control. It's just since there's a Corolla Paul Harris is using, and the noise off it off the line, and the Lancers and everything. But Kevin Lynch leading the whole thing away, quickest man over one day there ever was.
Was that the year he put it into someone's garden?
That was 2007. It's no, 2000 and. Oh, you could be right. Actually, it could be the year after. You're right.
When he spun it, he went down the road. For 5 years, he had a plan to go 5 years of rallying. And to be fair to him, when it was up, he stopped.
Oh, man.
That was sensible.
Well, it did go a bit bang there, too. But, yeah.
I think he's still operating in London. I've definitely seen... I was over in Kensington a couple of years ago. KPL vans.
Speaking of RPM, they did that Magnificent 7 one there a while ago. Of like drivers that never quite... won or made it, and there's a whole section of Lynch on that, and he's interviewed in it. It's very good.
He was very good at forestry
as well. Very good.
Yeah, one rally in a Group N car, and he went, "Yeah, there's not enough power in that," and got a World Rally car.
He was left foot breaking back when that wasn't a huge thing over here. I remember that, like,
you know, and using full stage three lag, like
yeah,
proper.
Yeah.
How many people actually use that?
There's probably a handful of drivers who did, you know, run the, because like anyone who's familiar with it will know that you can't run the most aggressive anti-lag unless you're a guy who's on the throttle a lot, because you'll just kill everything, you know, if you're off the throttle a lot. So yeah, it did need someone who was fairly well known to be running it, like, so. That's
There was a pro drive engineer, and I think he said that there were only three drivers in Ireland that have ever had the stage three lag.
Kevin Lynch is one of them.
That somewhere, I'd imagine Nesbitt. Donnelly might have been the other.
And Nesbitt was definitely one of them.
Surely. Yeah, surely. But anyway.
Other obscure car, just last one, just what I thought of. One car, when we were listing off all the cars that we remember being here, there was a Cordoba in Ireland.
Sean McCardle, yeah.
Yeah.
And we also had Gwyneth came over for Logan Park, and he even had an Evo 1 over here, believe it or not. So that was cool to see.
Man.
Or even was it 2005, was it, when George Tracy 06, when he bought it off Derek McGarty?
2004, I think, yeah, he had the blue one.
I remember being at the midpoint in Gartnagan, my first time seeing a Fabia and a 206 WRC go through there, and I remember thinking, holy shit, this is a different level, because we're used to Pro Drive S9s and S10s, they're just rally cars.
Probably a great revenue source completely for Pro Drive. Like, if you think about it, like, Ireland possibly were a major funding source for the World Rally Championship
100%.
Team. 100%. You look at,
like, you look at Pro Drive would build an S11 or an S12 just for a customer that was never a works car. There's some of those cars out there that were never work scares, that were just built straight for a privateer. There's still two of them here. But that's Pro Drive and M Sport always offered that service, even with the Group A cars. Mm. So it wasn't much to them. They were just charging the person more money, I guess.
Do you know what I love? You talk about that time, and was it one of the WRC crash videos, and they talk about, I think it was around the time Neil Cole was presenting it, and they go on showing car crashes or different events. And they have a thing where you guess is a wreck or is it a rebuild, and every single Pro Drive car that's on it goes, oh no, that car was rebuilt and it went down to rally in Ireland.
And the other thing as well, like, all those cars that came with all the bells and whistles, like, there's a modified, I watched it there maybe 2 weeks ago, it's like modified Masters 2007 an RPM DVD, and there's a guy in a Mark II Escort in 2007 in Northern Ireland with paddle shift. They're like,
yeah,
Jesus.
The crazy arc probably didn't even have that back then, like, you know, it was crazy. And like, one thing we probably didn't touch on was the amount of cars that were converted to right hand drive for privateers over here, because there's no other reason a World Rally car would have to be in right hand drive only for the Ireland or British market, you know.
Although the mad thing with Pro Drive, the Group N cars were all kind of modified, right? So the base car was always in right-hand drive anyway.
The Type RA,
The racks and M-Sport obviously did the same.
Yeah.
Stan Harper, I think, was the first to do it. And I remember up at the Motorsport.
Owen Lamont.
Yeah. The Motorsport show in the RDS?
The RDS.
They did a live action conversion from left to right. Jesus, we're sad. God, we're terrible.
What were you saying there, Art?
Because it had to be done properly, because there was a weird kind of fudge you could do here. Remember one year Mikhail went over to Rally GB with the Corolla in right-hand drive, and it wasn't that through scrutiny?
I remember
But then after that, they did it properly, and the bits were all homologated and stuff. And it can still be done. You just have to do enough of the parts. Citroën were going to do it for the DS3R5, if they got enough, and the C3R5.
Yeah.
If they're one, the problem is the way some of the R5 cars are designed now, you have to modify or bend the cage to do the conversion. Some you can just do it straight away, and then it's just a case the parts need to be homologated.
Yeah.
Because you can, with the R2 and R3 cars, you can do it very simply, and it's in the International Sporting Code. You just have to mirror the conversion, but when you're going down the road of spending that money on a car and then spending the money converting it, it was just a level of bespokeness that you could get then.
Yeah.
And suppose rules and everything have caught up with it now. Since it was kind of it was half lawless. Like
it was mad. There's so much as we mentioned some of the dodgy shit going on. You know, purely from a financial point of view, then we have all the crack with Ricky. There was, you know, the allegations of cheating and stuff. We won't get into it here because it's a little bit close to the board, and yeah. there's still a lot of people, you know, we don't want to fucking.
And there's still cars and sheds from that era that haven't been used since.
Yeah.
That haven't appeared since.
Yeah. So one of the first WRC cars I sat in actually was Doherty's P2000 when he got it in 2002. It was outside the hotel we were staying in Killarney at the time. I sat into it. I was only fucking, whatever, 10 or 11 years old. Brilliant. I'm sure he still has that car. Like, that's probably worth a fucking fortune now. Do you know what I mean? That P2000, I don't think it's ever gone outside of his hands since. So. But so it's just that kind of, we'll call it there because, as I said, we could probably write a book and maybe somebody will someday. Who knows? But anyway, so for episode 3, we'll have something very special guest coming up. We'll reveal that closer to the time. It'll be out in a couple of weeks' time as usual. So make sure and stay tuned for that. As I mentioned, go back and listen to series 1 if you haven't done so already. Also, episode 1 of this series. We've also started up a Patreon, whatever you want to call it. If you feel like donating the price of a cup of coffee or a pint or approximately 0.0000001% of the cost of a fuel.
Or a pro-drive
insurance cost of a WRC car for one day.
A can of lilts will do. A can of lilts.
That makes you impotent. You can't fucking stay away from that. That's the urban myth, isn't it?
If they could cover the excess on an S10, that'd be...
Yeah.
And you know what? In true boom style, we'll take it in a brown envelope.
Yes. Great. Cash only, yeah. Yeah, this is the sprint cash cast.